Campus FM presents Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by students of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
And welcome to Campus FM, Talking Eds, Season 3. This is Milton Resendez with my co-host, Salish Rose Corte.
Hello.
So today, we'll break down the complex topic of neoliberalism, not just to understand it better, but more importantly, to see how it impacts us in our day-to-day lives.
Indeed. Now, it can be quite a complex topic. So to help us understand it better, we have in the studios Professor Peter Mayo. Peter's expertise on sociology and education often takes him out of the country and into conferences to cover difficult topics such as these. He has authored well over 100 papers and has about 20 published books under his belt. Also, we are lucky to have him as a lecturer in our courses. So, Peter, he's smiling. Hello. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Okay, I just checked. I don't have a belt. Yeah, bit of humor just to begin.
Okay.
All right, well, let's get right into it. I know it's a little...
Let's cut to the chase.
Hard to, yeah, let's get to it.
In Hollywood, yes.
What is neoliberalism in layman's terms?
Oh, layperson's terms, yes, okay. Not easy to capture in a few words. It has got to do a lot with the market. You leave everything into the hands of the market, try and keep any kind of state regulation at arm's length. And basically, people are producers and consumers, and as a consumer, you have an element, supposedly, you have an element of choice between the better and cheaper product. Although, of course, it doesn't always work out like that. Mm-hmm. So it is the ideology of the marketplace primarily, but it's more than just economics. Because this also transcends the economic and ventures into every person's personal life. So you also have to function within a neoliberal mode of thinking, mode of living, which, as you probably realize, will affect also every aspect of your life. Because you are surrounded by commodities. You yourself become a commodity. And there's a price. And we see this in layperson's terms. In what we call things we use, expressions we use, sometimes pushed by prominent politicians, and make sense in terms of people's everyday life because we do not look at these things critically, but it connects with our preoccupations. However, we don't look at the larger picture. Mm. I mean, Margaret Thatcher was very successful. She said there's no such thing as society. It's only individuals. So neoliberalism is also based on not on collective community, it's based on individual self-interest. Mm-hmm. So what would a rational human being do in terms of her or his own or their own interest? Mm. So it's based on that premise. Of course, neoliberalism then depends on your ability to be able to choose and purchase. And not everybody has the ability to do that. So some people could survive because of support from the state, what we used to call the welfare state. Mm. That state gets denigrated. It's called the nanny state and becomes the object of repudiation. And we hear common sense things like I used to hear in the late 80s, even by well-established sociologists over here. I heard one of them once say, now we are moving from the idea of a welfare state to a welfare society. You are responsible for your own welfare, or your family is. Hence, if the state doesn't fork out, you know, the state will not provide you with the support that you need, you have to pull up your bootstraps, primarily. Mm. And if you falter, that's your fault.
Right. Now, Peter, it seems like you're talking more of disadvantages. Does neoliberalism have advantages? And if so, who do they benefit?
Who does it benefit? Well, okay, you are asking the wrong person about this. Let me put it this way. Hmm. People who are fed up with over-bureaucratization of the state, they tend to therefore see the solution not in reforming the state institutions, which is, I think, where the work should be done. Of course there is. Of course the things become cantankerous. Of course you get a Kafkaesque, you know, Kafka, you hold the idea of Kafka, situations. Yes, bureaucracies have their own rules and they can be stultifying. Okay, I myself, you know, often lose it when I'm dealing with all these excessive bureaucracies. But rather than finding ways of how do we reform these state institutions, or maybe other solutions which don't come to mind, we say, okay, give it to the private sector. It can do a better job.
Yes.
Now, we know that the private sector has not done a better job. Ask the Brits and the transport system, especially the railways. Okay, the railway system. So it's not always the case. But that's how it, you know, this is the whole idea. We tend to pit the state institutions against the private sector. So it's all about privatization. So this is another aspect of neoliberalism, is the swing is towards the private sector. So you've got a service taking place in an institution where you have people who know the institution, they are born within the institution, that they consider themselves to be part of the institution. Okay, no, we don't employ those people anymore. We subcontract to another private institution which provides it. So, for example, this building here, we used to have people working in the canteen and cleaners, you name it, a whole range of jobs. People were part of the family. They were part of the institution. They knew the institution inside out. They were employees. Today, don't get that. Who does the cleaning? You got cleaning companies doing these, competing to get to offer the best price. Same thing. Now, some people see, of course, value in competition. You know, the people argue that competition brings the best out of people. Mm-hmm. State has no competition. It's a monopoly. So I can see the logic in that. And so that's how most people view things. So there is this whole idea that, you know, give it to the private sector, based on the principle that unless you face the... Because then also, people who are employed in the state sector have cushy jobs because they're jobs for life, you know, unless you kill somebody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just to put it in layperson's terms, mm-hmm. over here in Malta, if you're in a private sector, if you don't deliver, you're out, you know? And therefore, that increases the productivity. So I can see people arguing, and I've had people argue, you know, this will only improve if you face the danger of losing your job. You face the challenge of losing your job. You know, I can see where people are coming from in seeing this. It's often a dissatisfaction with state institutions. And you have to see this neoliberalism against what happened after the war, and even in America before the war, where you had the welfare state. Mm. And of course, the exception often becomes the rule. So if people are pilfering, if people are abusing of the system, mm-hmm. those are the ones who are projected to show how welfareism doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I remember even the tabloids in England in the 70s, I remember front page, because this guy has become an extremely wealthy person out of welfare. Mm-hmm. So he's front page news, you know what I mean? You see what's rotten with Labour and its politics, the Labour Party at the time, you know? So we debunk all that happened in the post-war period when the NHS was established, welfare state was established under the Clement Attlee government, etc. So that's one side to it, and I can see where that's coming from. On the other hand, excessive use of the market cannot cater for certain aspects in life. Mm. And we see everywhere you go, just go to any place in Europe, and it will happen, it's happening even here in certain places, but more so, I go to London to visit my daughter or to give, even I was lecturing there. I mean, the poverty increases. Most of those are the victims of a neoliberal system, where it is a heartless system, it's based on competition and self-interest. And those who fall by the wayside are either policed, because this is where now the state comes in. The state has not gone away. The state has changed its role. It's emphasizing its, for example, its repressive status. Mm-hmm. It's also emphasizes commercial status, the state itself as an economic player. You look at the poverty, people homeless, etc. Where's the provision? Where's the social housing, etc., or council houses, etc.? These are the victims of neoliberalism. Now, they have to be policed. They have to be moved aside, as you had in New York City, for example, under Mayor Giuliani. He cleaned the city. What did he do? He cleansed it of the people who are victims of a neoliberal process. Mm. Keep them away. Keep them out of place and out of sight.
So, Peter, is your posturing that there are no actual benefits? Because you have stated them, but you've stated them with buts. It's like, get it, but...
Yeah, well, everything is like that, I suppose, in life. There's no such thing as, you know, like 100% success, 100% failure. But I am more inclined to say that neoliberalism, well, I mean, research shows it, in many parts of the world has failed. Mm-hmm. This is all part of what is now known as, because what abets neoliberalism is also the process which gives power to industry as a result of information technology, to shift its borders. You have a process of, for example, greater emphasis on financial capital, as you had in England under Margaret Thatcher, deindustrializing the economy. Everything comes from the city. You don't understand mm-hmm. that. I mean, the, mm-hmm. the financial side. Well, there's research everywhere shows that many people, especially in the South, and the geographical now, I'm talking about global South, because when we talk about global South, we're also referring to people who are also ensconced in geographically northern places.
Mm.
But if you look at them, if you look at the many countries in the South have not benefited from neoliberalism. It's more the West which has benefited, and even the West has its casualties inside its own places. No, I tend to be inclined that we need a much fairer and better system, a more human system, socially just system, than the neoliberal system. Because the neoliberal system, what it does, it deregulates. It has removed any kind of regulation, which derives from two things. It derives from a state, in the post-war state, which on the one hand is a capitalist state in the West, primarily a capitalist state. It has to answer for capital. It has to support capital. We call it accumulation of capital. But on the other hand, has to legitimize itself democratically. Why? Because it has to listen to the voice of people, fought in the war, they expect, you know, like a decent living because they put their life on the line. Some of them have suffered, have become, you know, vets who are now maimed, you know, so they expect this. And therefore the state had to guarantee a measure of support to enable people to be able to survive, to be able to have the wherewithal to consume as well. And that's what we call the welfare state, or what on the continent they call the social state, Stato Sociale in Italian. Because now big business has tremendous power, it always had, but now is, they can actually tell you, I'm putting this very simply, I mean it's much more complex, but I put it very simply. Listen, if you don't change your conditions, I'm not going to invest in your country.
Yeah.
And coming from a developing country, I have heard that a lot.
You know, yes, of course. I mean, unless I find the right infrastructure for me to invest, I'm not going to go in there. You know, like trade unions are too powerful.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The standard of living is much beyond what we can afford, they say. Well, they can afford much more than that. So I can go somewhere else, you know. And now my production is much more dispersed. So I have one person, I have people in this place doing something, people in another place doing this, much more dispersed. It's not like a concentration. And so I'm going to leave if I'm there. Never mind the community, I'm going to leave behind me the community which I have made dependent on my location of industry, where you have places like even the schools are geared towards employment in that place. All of a sudden I'm leaving and I'm going to wreck a whole community.
Yeah.
They won't say that. Well, business is business, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to go down there, I'm going down to Mexico from the United States. I find cheap labor. You know, government. We can bend governments to our will over there. Of course, they want employment better than having people dying hungry, mm-hmm. so they're going to accept my conditions, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have a lot of this going on. Whole community is destroyed. Mm-hmm. Think of Detroit, the car industry over there. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't think neoliberalism, while, you know, may have some virtues, but I think at the end of the day, it's very anti-community, collective identity, etc. It is very individualistic oriented. And it has an effect on our social life.
Mm-hmm.
We begin to listen to all these buzzwords, these phrases. Let's take education, where we are all involved.
Mm-hmm.
You get a slogan like, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. Now that sounds great, you know, sounds wise. What that means is, if you can't afford to pay for education, well, what can I do? Don't expect the state to support you, you know? Pull up your bootstraps is the American expression for this.
Yeah. All right, so
you're on your own, you know?
This is Talking Heads, Season 3, brought to you by the third cohort of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
Nafisa, for instance, there's a lot of privatization of government and state enterprises in Ghana right now. Currently, yes. The ECG, yeah. which was government-owned, has been privatized. That's the electricity company of Ghana. It's now being run by a private entity.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen to a lot of others, including water.
Yeah,
and
you're
all
selling
those things.
Everything. So, you're selling your assets, airports, whatever, you name it.
It seems like it's on the ground. It's because the state hasn't been able to manage it. So this inability doesn't not feed into what is making neoliberalism so powerful.
Well, you know, like a combination of many factors, but one of them is, yes, they're on the back foot. And even trade unions are on the back foot, or have been on the back foot in this regard. Because there is a challenge. You know, being threatened. Etc. You can't cope. So I better prepare the infrastructure to attract investment. If this also means keep the cost of labor low, unless I do that, I'm going to lose out on investment, and people are going to go. You know, and this is a big issue, a big dilemma that governments had to face. You know, and of course, the moment you try to nationalize things, your own resources, you get demonized. You know, as an old Marxian dinosaur. Look what happened to Chavez, for instance. Look what happened to many other people. If you try to create a mode of regulation, a modicum of regulation, the Western media, the global media, is going to demonize you. Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult for governments. It's very difficult for governments. And that's not also rule out corruption. Because contracts come into these things, kickbacks become part of the order of the day, etc. You know, like, oh, what's in it for me out of this contract I'm going to give to the privatization of for the privatization of this particular place. So there are many, many factors. Remember one thing. At the end of the day, I consider, and I'm going to sound very extreme here, the neoliberal process as being very violent. Now, right now I would say it's violent in the sense of what I call symbolic violence. Not I call that. Johan Galtung made that distinction, which is, you know, it's not physical violence, but you feel it. So many people are, I mean, statistics show that Latin America, the gap is between poverty, the poor and the haves and the have-nots has been increasing, even in Western Europe, etc. People are now, have no security. This is something I was made aware of a co-author with me from Italy. For something, at least, no matter how exploitative workers were in the past, and by workers, I refer to men, women, whatever, you know, different ethnic groups, etc. You are guaranteed, you can say you are guaranteed, exploitation all your life, but at least you had something which somebody representing you can put forward as an important factor of production, which is guaranteed, which is you are a worker. Now, that is no longer guaranteed. You don't have any guarantee that you are going to remain a worker for the rest of your life. Everything is contract-based. Everything is on a contract base. So this is it. You are also part of the market.
Right.
You get a contract as long as you are marketable. You are also a consumption product yourself, a consumer product.
Exactly.
Interesting.
So when you hear the word precariate, I don't think it's that new, because the old working laboring classes in the past, before they got organized, were very much in a precarious situation. Today you got a paint job. Tomorrow you don't. There's a famous novel called The Ragged Trousers Philanthropist, which is about Britain during Edwardian times. So it was a well-known book, and a bridge version of it was distributed throughout the country by the Attlee government, and it got the Labour Party into it. Helped as part of the cultural action, which got the Labour Party into the government. Yeah. Not alone, and one factor amongst many. And that's the kind of life they were living. That was a very, very precarious life. You know, like, I've got a task to do today, but I can't plan a career. And this is the problem you have today with neoliberalism. You are also part of the market, what we call the labor market, and people pick and choose. And it gets much more interesting now, because part of neoliberalism is also places in Africa and other parts of the world, like Latin America, etc., have to conform to certain rules of the game. They become dependent on World Bank, International Monetary Fund. Why? Maybe because there's a minority tribe which has always been supporting the foreign capitalist powers. So they buy armaments from them. They incur debts. They turn to the World Bank. The World Bank says, well, to survive, you have to cut down on this. You have to cut down. And what are you cutting down on? Social programs, most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Social programs. So there you are. So even there, so many people cannot manage it. They cannot survive. They leave an already ransacked continent, ransacked by European powers, they leave You also have indigenous factors. Mm-hmm. And they become part of a surplus, they have a reserve army, a big reserve army, in the gates of the West, which will be used to depress local wages.
All right, yeah. So shifting our attention to education, how does this affect, let's say, a 17-year-old Maltese student?
It will, because it also affects the range of choice that a person has in terms of what he, she, or whoever is guiding them considers to be an important education. An important education in what gets her or him employed, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And we know that there's more to education than just that. So, of course, it affects you in many ways. It affects you, first of all, in terms of, okay, what am I going to do with this? So instrumental reasoning comes in. Mm-hmm. How marketable is the subject I'm learning?
Mm-hmm.
B, you can also be fooled. You think you have a marketable subject, but what's happening with mass migration, and I'm talking about people now who are often destitute, but there is also mass migration of highly qualified people from places like China, etc., who are flooding the international market, lowering the price of being an engineer or being an ICT specialist. And you, who have been aspiring to a particular lifestyle and got a degree in this particular subject, you have to compete according to these conditions, which are way below your expectations in life. You may be earning more, as some protesting Viennese students, students from Vienna against the neoliberalization of their own university, told me and Carmel Borgia many years ago. We were doing a workshop with people involved in the UniBrent, the University Burns movement in Vienna. We were invited by the Green Academy there, which is a very left-wing academy, by the way, to make theoretical sense out of what was happening. And they told me, we are earning more qualifications than our parents, but we can never dream of having their standard of living. Now, standard of living can always be questioned on whose backs, at the expense of whom. But there you go. You may have more qualifications than your parents, but you are never going to get the kind of job which allow you to enjoy the same lifestyle.
Mm.
So people have become déclassé. So the effects are all there. You see it all around you. Education has been changed by neoliberalism. Education is no longer a public good in many places. It becomes a consumption good.
Yeah.
You earn like buying a clothes. You get a positional good.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you pay for it, the more. Malta is not that bad in that regard. But think of, you know, like it's not what your degree is in, but where you where got you it got from, it. That's mm-hmm. a positional good on the market.
Mm.
So it's become a consumption good in many respects. And that's one of the major criticisms that we have been having of the educational system for donkey's years, I'd say. Since the onset of neoliberalization, the violence of liberalization that we hear all the time about universities. There are books about the subject, how the university has been changed. Mm. It's become a consumption good. It's violence. And if I may, it has its roots in one of the most violent contexts that I remember in my lifetime. And that was 1973, the coup d'etat in Chile.
Mm.
That coup d'etat was to remove a socialist president, Salvador Allende, from power, despite having everything passed through a parliamentary system, for which he was criticized also by Castro, by the way, because he didn't drive home his advantage. But he was nationalizing the most important industries, from communication, but particularly copper. That was not good for the multinationals. And you have this bloody coup d'etat, which was intended to bring in some of the neoliberal, they didn't call it neoliberalism then, not even within Margaret Thatcher's time. Stuart Hall coined the phrase Thatcherism, which is basically neoliberalism, coupled with Victorian values. Because neoliberalism can disorient people,
yeah.
And therefore they have to fall back to some kind of conservative. So you have this paradox between neoliberal economics, liberalization of the economy, but at the same time, old values to keep the society together, you know? And the same thing you have with Turkey, with Erdogan right now,
right.
Islamic values and neoliberal economics. In Chile, up to this present day, how does neoliberalism affect people? You have to pay for every aspect of education, including sending your children to a state primary school. You've got to pay for that. So that's the ultimate in terms of neoliberal policies.
Right, so the question is, should we get rid of teaching music theory and then just start teaching programming for the sake of the market, or what should we do instead?
Oh, my God.
Well, I'm being a pessimist, I know.
You know, you're playing a devil's advocate. I think you know the answer to that question.
I know.
Unless from a neoliberalist perspective, which is not my perspective, I'm sure I made this clear. Of
yes,
course,
you have.
As long as music is marketable, you teach it. But you justify it in commercial terms. We can justify our heritage here in Malta in touristic terms.
Yes.
That's neoliberal thinking. You know, that's neoliberal thinking. We call it entrepreneurship. I think, well, sometimes it's very good. Another aspect, we spoke about the poorest people, the victims, but everybody's a victim.
True.
If you can't plan a career because you're on a contract base, as some of my PhD friends in Italy are, you are on a determined, determinato, I'm using the Italian term, determined contract, how can you plan a future? How can you plan a family? How can you plan a pathway for you and your partner? Let's put it this way, all right? Whatever kind of family I'm talking about, how can you plan that? Would it be surprising that you are suffer anxiety? I think anxiety becomes very much the order of the day.
Depression?
Pretty much.
What's the solution? Our well-being. So now we have also this discourse of well-being, which we have to be careful. You know, I'm not saying, I'm not dismissing well-being as being that, but it can also, one has to be wary. It's ways and means of adjusting individually to something which is structured collectively. We never ask the question, what are the forces which collectively are shaping the kind of anxiety being felt by people? No, we put this always, the blame always in the individual. What is making you feel so much anxiety? I have nothing against psychiatrists. You know, I have nothing against it. I use them. I have used them. I have been to them myself. I have nothing, but not everything is simply a mental contraption. There are structuring forces which create those mental contractions. And that's where we have to start asking questions. Even well-being, nothing is innocent in terminology, is also, one has to be careful about.
Wow. You know what, if we could continue going on and on, because he's opened up like a new area. We
you know,
could
I wrote
a
book about this called Hegemony and Education under Neoliberalism, Insights from Gramsci, the subtitle, published by Routledge in 2015.
If you're still interested in this particular topic, which I believe you are, you should go get that book by Professor Peter May.
By the way, it's paperback. It has a decent price.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
decent price.
Books are not, you know.
Decent price. Okay.
Decent price.
Okay.
All right. Well,
that's it, right? We're a little hyped up because we've learned so much.
So there's so much to say, you know. So there's always a danger of reducing everything to... It's a very complex issue. It needs more than just one.
It is a complex issue. And we'll definitely try and then find more time to delve deeper into it.
I work in this university, so it's not a big deal for me to come up to this place.
We know. Thank you so much, Peter, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Of course. All right. Well, signing off, Milton Resendez.
And Solis Rose Quartey. Stay tuned for our next episode. Bye.
Goodbye.